With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, welcome to And the Writer Is. I'm your host, Ross Golan. I've written with hundreds of artists and writers over the years, and my favorite part of each session is the first hour when we catch up about life, the industry, politics, composition, whatever. So this is a journey of learning why people write songs, how people write songs, and most importantly, who the people are who write the songs. I'm producing this with the great Joe London, Big Deal Music Publishing, and Mega House Music Management. If you want to listen to the songs we discuss in this podcast, follow us on our socials, find out about special live events, or buy that merch, aka that hat I always wear, go to our website, www.andthewriteris.com. For a little bit of context, we just wanted you to know that a lot of these were recorded before quarantine. And as we know, a lot has changed in 2020. So again, please stay safe out there. And enjoy the new episodes of And the Writer Is. Welcome to And the Writer Is. I am your host, Ross Golan. Today's legend in the making went from sleeping on friends' floors to landing tracks on the biggest artists of not just now, but of all time. Beyonce and Kanye, Pharrell and Beyond. Hey, this gyro with Jeremiah Hurry. Oh my gosh, wait, there's more. He's an artist too. This February, he released his debut with features like Timbaland, Ty Dolla $ign, and Pharrell. From New Jersey, this guy is effortlessly taking over the industry well. I don't know why I started rhyming his intro, but I was inspired while listening to Happy to Be Here. So here we go. And the writer is Aunt Clemens.
Wow. Yeah. I can't tell you how amazing that is to hear that. I've dreamed of that like so many different ways, and that was amazing. Yep. Like, I'm a huge fan of the pod, bro. Like, huge, huge, huge fan. Like, when I was in LA for the first couple times, like just coming out here, I was only listening to the pod, and it was giving me hope. Like, the songwriters could actually really, really do it. It was like the Charlie Puth one that you did. And the Babyface one, I was like, yo, who is Ross? And how is he so plugged with everyone I want to work with? And man, it's just an honor to be here. Like, I hate to be so cliche, but I really am happy to be here.
No, that's amazing, man. You know, we've said this a million times on this thing, but we really genuinely thought this was just going to be conversations with friends in the industry. You know, it's like you meet people along the way, and it's always so fun to get to meet people.
Yeah.
But now that it's just had its own life, and you know, it's the same thing as having an album that people listen to or something like that. You just don't you go into it. If you go into it for the right reasons, then
you always get good back. Like, I'm completely in agreement with that. I don't even know where I'm at as far as just people's perception all the time. But I just love what I do. And I feel like if you just create from a place of where you love what you do, you're always going to be winning. You'll always be winning. So I want to have, like, I don't know if the listeners can't see, but you have a Fire And the Writer Is hat on right now that I really want. I will get off brand and put that hat on. That's how much I love the pod. Like, where can I buy?
That feels like a... Listen, you know, this is the first time you and I are meeting, yeah. So... Let's just talk like it is, you know. Tell me about where are you from?
Willimboro, New Jersey. I grew up in a small town in New Jersey. It's like probably about 10, 15 minutes away from Philly. And I've been doing music like in my head my whole life. But outwardly, 2009 was like my first time really like stepping out and really trying to like do something with music. Around that time, my parents were going through a divorce, and I didn't really have an outlet to talk about it. I use my music as my tool to like kind of get through what I was going through at that time. And it, I found that I love to tell stories. I was like, oh wow, I could tell my story. And I, through talking with friends and just reliving their experiences, I was able to take some of their stories and turn them into songs. And it just grew into something that where we're at today, where I'm like talking with you. Yeah, it's really, really a blessing, like all of it. But it's just like, I still can't even believe that this guy from Wellingborough, New Jersey is able to create and do this as a full-time thing.
You play music when you were little?
A little bit, but not really. I just used the vocal cords. Like that was my instrument when people would ask. Like I could play piano a little by ear, and then throughout the years I picked up the guitar, but not really. It was more just singing.
But sure, I mean, I guess like what kind of music were you listening to when you were
growing up?
A kid.
And the Clemens household was, you get anybody from Stevie Wonder to Michael Jackson. I'm a huge Michael Jackson fan, like huge Michael Jackson fan. So I grew up loving Mike. I got into Prince a little later, but Prince was being played in the house. Biggie, like Tupac, like it was so diverse. And we were rooted in the church. So it was just a lot of different gospel, a lot of different hymns, a lot of Kirk Franklin, Fred Hammond, growing up on like those amazing soul sonics and just powerful lyrics that talked about how amazing Jesus Christ is. I'm a Christian and I literally give all of my credit to Jesus. Like God did all of this. So, I'm sorry. I think that answered the house question.
Great. When, you know, to find inspiration is hard for a lot of people. A lot of people will even ask, like, what do you write songs about?
Right.
If you have a deep connection with anything, like let it roll. You know, I think that's important.
Absolutely.
Was the first songs, were they religious songs?
They weren't, but they were relationship songs about relationships I would long for. I was writing from I'm a lover of love. So I love love, and that's a great thing and a detriment at the same time, because sometimes I fall in love with the idea of love, and I was writing to the idea of love a lot from, and like when I was just falling in love with trying to write, I was writing to the idea of love and what I would want to experience and the blindness of what I believe love was. Growing up watching sitcoms and seeing the Cosby Show and saying, okay, I want to love like Claire and Cliff. But I didn't know what that actually really took to get to a level of the parents of a household that are, and I didn't even realize at that time that that was just a television show. You know, it was like different things I had to learn experience wise. Through the years, I found that the songs I fell in love with, some were about the ideals of love, but a lot of the ones I connected with personally were people's experience of love in real time. And reality, and how to love someone, and through their eyes, through whoever the artist is I'm listening to, and their perspective of it. I always just wanted to write love songs, and I feel like you can always find love throughout anything. So I think I started there, and then just expanded the palette to okay, well, if I can write about love, I can write about sad. If I can write about sad, I can write about a shoelace, like or. Whatever the topic is, as long as it can be connected to the person that we're trying to get the message to.
Looking at TV families as, you know, the quintessential family, you know, it's scripted.
Yeah.
There are people who, this is how to love, and who knows what those writers are like at
right.
home.
And, right.
Also in the same place where they're also writing these characters because they don't have it at home.
Right.
But my, not everybody who writes for, you know, these TV shows would necessarily have the life that they are portraying on TV.
Right.
And thing, but do you think you know what was missing in your life now that you're older?
I don't think it was anything that was missing. I think I was just looking at it the wrong way. I think the love that I was looking for was always there. It was just, the route I was trying to take wasn't the one that was for me.
What was that?
Just trying to get love through what I thought it was. So my ideals of love, and if it didn't look like this, then that must not be love. And I don't believe that that's what love is. I believe that in getting older is just people's experiences and their perspectives shape who they are. And that's okay. So although I grew up in a household with two parents looking at the Cosby Show and all these different ideals, that was my personal upbringing. And that might not be the same as the person that I'm in a relationship with. And that's okay. As long as we connect at a base level. For me personally, my partner has to have a relationship with God. But outside of that, we can figure everything else out.
Yeah. The proximity where you grew up to Philadelphia, which is, you know, one of the music meccas of the planet. How much did that influence or not influence your musicianship?
Tremendously. I think it absolutely influenced it. I think location shapes what you view as good and what you view as great. My threshold for great was Philly. It was a large task to try to even be mentioned in the same names as some of the legends that came out of Philadelphia. So it's like, they're really tall shoes to fill. It wasn't like, okay, I'm gonna just try to do this thing and just put it out. It was like, well, no, people were coming to Sigma Sound in the 70s and recording classic albums. Like, and it's like, I have to at least have something that's going to have an imprint on this music industry. I just can't just make some noise.
Did you go to Philly at all to sing or to do music? You know, you were saying you didn't really release music or really think about putting out music until, you know, you were essentially 18 at the time, you know, childhood, but you're still close to that Mecca. I would assume that you'd be, you know, were you ever performing in Philly before you?
The thing with me was I wasn't the hugest fan of my own voice. So I believe that I didn't have like the most confidence in my voice. I honestly still to this day sometimes doubt like if I sound good on records. Not like, oh, still to this day. But honestly, I really don't know. Going back to the idea of even creating like the podcast for you, you do something out of, you love it and you don't know how people are going to react to it. Personally, I was like, I don't sound like Michael Jackson. I don't sound like Stevie Wonder, the people I'm listening to. So maybe that's not good. So what I was doing in Philly was working on the craft of, I always wanted to be an artist, but I figured the best way to do that was to be an asset to an artist. So you become like immovable or in their situation. Going firsthand, I was like, well, what could I do? I liked producing. I thought it was cool, but I loved telling stories. So when I was going to Philly, it was with my sister Shamika. Like she is a blessing. She's one of my OGs in Philly that basically got a got a glimpse of me in a studio and was like, hey, you have talent, just come work with me. I want to like help you write and to like just figure this out. And her and I would go to so many different sessions at my brother Brian's house in Manny Young. Like I was back and forth taking my last couple Red Lobster checks, like the tips, and going on the I'm trying to remember. I know when I'm in Philly is from Jersey to Philly was the 411 to get to catch the 23 to get all the way to Germantown just to record. Like, so it would probably take me 2 or 3 hours figuring it out. But I'd go every single day I possibly could, just back and forth from Jersey to Philly, trying to make it happen with Shamika, working on records. And Shamika actually was one of the biggest reasons outside of my mom pushing me that we went to LA the first time. She was like, hey, we're killing it in Philly. There's not too many people that you can't really get to right now on the songwriter side. And I feel like we should test our waters in LA. Like, let's go where the music industry is. Everybody's out there. And we went in 2016 for the first time in February. I went out with Shamika on a Grammy weekend and I was like, whoa, people live here? Like, wait a minute, all the stars are just here? This is nuts. Like, and not just the stars, but the producers and the writers and the engineers and like everybody's just here. Like they've been here the whole time. I thought they just lived in my TV. This is nuts. So that entire year, 2016, Shamika and I would, Shamika's hilarious. She stayed out in Cali when I left because she didn't tell me her plan. Her plan was, hey, we're going to LA, but I'm not coming back. And I was just like, I didn't know you was not coming back. I got some stuff to do. I went back home and I'd work for about a week or so at Red Lobster, save up my money and catch a flight right back to Cali. And for the entire 2016, I probably came to California all of 16 or 17 times. And after that, my mom was like, all right, because what I was doing was taking some of the rent money that I would, and I was using the son grace period of like, I'm your son. You're not going to kick me out. I'm your firstborn. You know I'm your favorite. Amber and Ashley, sorry, y'all. But, you know, I'm the favorite. So, like, my mom basically goes, I'm tired of you taking my rent money and going to Cali. Just go to California for a year. This is 2017. She's like, go to Cali for a year, see what comes of it. And if nothing really happens, you got to come back home and we got to figure something out. And the blessing to have a parent that believes in you is such a asset that I don't take it for granted at all. Like you hear everyone's story, not everyone, but you hear a lot of stories of, oh, so-and-so didn't believe in me and I had to do this because my parents didn't. My parents were the biggest Anthony Clemens Jr. fans before I even knew what I wanted to do. They were just fans of all of us, me, my sister, and my sister Amber and my sister Ashley. Amber's an amazing DJ. Ashley's a phenomenal makeup artist. I said, hate to plug them off. But after my mom That's had great. The conversation with me in 2017 about like, yeah, like go. I asked Shamika, who was already in LA. I'm like, yo, how is it? She's like, I thought you was been moving out here. I tried to trick you to move out, but you just didn't get the trick. So I was like, all right, cool. I moved to Cali on 420, 2017. And super ironic. It was just an amazing day. Like I was smoking weed a little bit before that, but I don't know if we can talk about smoking weed or not, but.
Talk about what?
Ooh, so.
No, I mean, obviously you have really good parents if they're supporting you in this. And you know, if your two sisters are also able to be artists, that takes parents that are willing to encourage their kids to do something out of the box.
Absolutely. It's like, it's odd because it's like, I never in a million years thought it would be this way as far as like just the support system. And my mom, my biggest fan in the world, before anything has ever happened, she'd been my biggest fan. So we move out to LA. Oh, my fault. What were you about to say?
I feel like, you know, when you were saying, you know, you'd save up at Red Lobster, there's this thing in where I think people forget, and I know this wasn't that long ago for you either, but people often forget where they come from and they don't realize that the person who might be working at Red Lobster in the middle of New Jersey might actually have the talent to be, you know, world-class talent. Yeah. I've seen some, you know, new writers where I've talked to their parents and been like, you're so used to that talent at home that you don't think of it as being world-class just because it's your kid.
Because it's at home and you're used to it, right?
Yeah. Or it's like you're at, you know, the fact of that waiter at Red Lobster has that talent, you know, when you come across somebody who's an Uber driver, is like, I'm a musician, having been there not that recent, you know, not that long ago, do you listen to all the music people play you? Do you view it as attainable?
Hell no. For those people? Y'all can't. I'm joking. I'm completely joking. No, for me, I go the extra mile to listen. I'm the worst when it comes to DMs. So it's like DMing beats and like songs through the DMs is like the worst way to contact me. But meeting somebody in an Uber, I'm a regular person. I'm having a conversation with someone that has a dream just like how I had a dream. And if they're kind enough to listen to my story. I know I don't like to, like, you know, super sell everybody, hey, I did this and you can do this. But if they're open to listening, absolutely keep going. You never know what your talent is going to do. What I tell everybody that I meet, like, depends on, you know, the spaces. It's more keep running your race. Like, so if you're that Uber driver that's literally the songwriter or the musician, play your records in the car. When that person asks, who's that? Is right there. Like, for me, if I was, like, back in 2017 and I hadn't taken the leap to California yet and I was still just working at Red Lobster, I would absolutely be Uber driving. I'd be doing Postmates. I'd do anything I possibly could to just show people, one, I have a talent, but then to connect to people to see what the people need. Like, right, being an Uber driver, you know better than a politician, I believe, what the people need, because you see the people every single day. Like, you talk to the people every day, and you overhear conversations, you hear what makes somebody have a good day, what makes someone have a bad day, and you can be a person that implements that with your craft if you have the courage and the work ethic. Yeah.
If you're in a car with somebody who you know is driving however long or doing whatever job 60 hours a week, so that way they can record for the other 40 hours of the week or whatever, you can't help but admire the fact that, you know, especially on the come up, so you have to do those kinds of hours in order to just stay afloat and be creative in your off time. Did you find that, you know, that work ethic, once you're able to quit the job, I imagine the amount of hours it took to get to and from the studio, you probably wrote a lot of lyrics and a lot of stories on the
bus rides, the train rides, the walking. When I first came to Cali, it was trying to figure it out. I had met Chris Brown's engineer, one of my homies now, Pat Tizio. He's like one of the coldest engineers out. He mixes everything. And I had met him in New York. And he was like, yo, I mix Chris Brown stuff. If you're ever in LA, hit me up. People say, if you're ever in LA, hit me up all the time, right? And I didn't understand that until I got to LA. Not saying that Tizio was one of the people that said, yo, just hit me up. But I was making sure I was available to go to that meeting or just even get up with him. And it never happened in the time that I thought it would. When we inevitably didn't get up, it was because we were at the exact same place at the exact same time. It wasn't the, I'm waiting for you, I'm waiting for you, I'm waiting for you, or you're waiting for me, you're waiting for me. It was like God's timing of us being at the exact same place at the exact same time when we were supposed to. And since we've been able to maintain and build a relationship that's been phenomenal. He hits me just like, yo, did you hear the mix on so-and-so? Yeah, this is crazy. Like, it's so cool to think that back to when I was trying to figure it out. I was taking the bus to a Starbucks in North Hollywood that had Wi-Fi because I didn't have any money to pay. It was either pay for your phone bill or pay to come to Cali. And I would go out to Cali with no phone service, and I would just go to like a Starbucks and that had Wi-Fi because I'd found all the different places that had free Wi-Fi. And you find the little tricks of the trade to get to the goal that you want. So I'd go to Starbucks for the Wi-Fi. I'd go to Planet Fitness for the shower. You know, and I like finesse the system that was right here in front of me. And that hustle was just kind of just to figure it out because I didn't want to have to call my mom and tell her, hey, I don't have any money. I don't have a clue as to what's going on. I had my relationship with God and I knew that what I was doing was bigger than the circumstance I was at. So I knew I was going to be uncomfortable, but something my mom always told me growing up was sometimes you have to be a little uncomfortable to get comfortable. So I was like, all right, and it's like, how much are you willing to take? I was transferred to the Red Lobster out here in Cali, but they never picked me up. Like, I went on a couple of training sessions, but they never made the initial, they never like essentially hired me. Like they took me on some training stuff. It was crazy. And basically they were like, you could work here if you buy these work shoes. It was $30. And the day I was going to go buy my work shoes, one of my friends had hit me and said, "Hey, I have a session. You trying to pull up?" And it cost $30 in the Uber to get there in the right amount of time. I did not buy those work shoes. I didn't look back. I was like, I came out to Cali to figure this out, and let's make this music. Spent my last 30 on the Uber at the time. And by the grace of God, after that session, she let me stay at her house. And Shamika. This is my friend Tammy. Tammy had said, "Hey, I have a session. If you're trying to pull up, come by." She didn't know I was homeless, but she was just like, "Yeah, come on, crash my house tonight." It was amazing. The very next day, my bro Scott from this group Triangle Park from Philly, one of the people I was working with Shamika with when we were going back and forth to Philly, he says, "Yo, I'm in North Hollywood. Come on by the crib." I'm there. I get to his house. We worked on probably like 10 songs, like 10 or 11 songs. And he's losing his mind because, like, we did them very fast. We probably did them like 3 hours. But that's because we had a little workflow in Philly. But he's like, "I forgot how fun it was working with you, bro." Like, all right. And I didn't tell them that I didn't have a place to go. But I kind of just stayed at their house for like a week or so. They woke up on the last day like, "Don't you got to get back to?" I didn't have a get back to that I had to get back to. And Scott talked to Ali and Dre, who were also living in the house, my brothers. And they all came together and were like, "Okay, you can live here rent free. You don't got to worry about anything. You don't have to pay a bill. Your collateral is just you have to write a song of debt." What? Wait a minute. You mean to tell me I'm going to have a place to stay and all I have to do is do what I'm already doing on my own? Like what I was already spending my Red Lobster dollars on, doing multiple songs a day, but I have a place to stay. Even if it's a floor, I'll take it because it's rent free and I have nothing to worry about. And for the next few months or so, I probably moved in to Scott and Ali and Dre's house and around, if I moved out here 420, probably that very next month, the following month, I got my very first placement with Luke James. It's a song called Drip. I had did it with Ryan Toby, who just happened to be from Willenboro, New Jersey, where I was from. So it's like, and that was through Ali reconnecting me to Ryan Toby, saying Ryan Toby from Sister Act 2, the when Jesus was, he was in City High, and he's amazing. That's like my brother. He called me. He's like, "Yeah, you from Willenboro? Oh, it's over. Now we got to work." So I'm living at Ali's house. I had just got my very first placement, and I'm like, this is it. I'm in the music industry. And through Luke, I had met Roe James and did a record on Roe James' project, and it was amazing. And
it takes so long from when you get a placement to when you make money from that placement.
Wait a minute. Like, no one tells you that. No one tells you when you get in the door. All they preach to you before you get there is, you got to get a placement. You got to get a placement. You got to get a placement. Do you have any placements? Do you got to, like, so I was like, I got this magical placement thing. Now what? And then it's like, now you got to wait. As a songwriter, now you got to wait at least 9 months to see if it made any money. And that's like praying that the label and everybody put money into it. And it's a whole lot that goes into just one song. And if that one song dropped on a Friday where 2,000 songs dropped, it's like, what? Huh? It's an interesting space to be in, but if you look at it the right way, I think you could always feel like you're winning. If you look at it and you're like, well, no, I didn't make millions of dollars off of my first placement, but my first placement got me opportunities to get the next one, you'll always be winning. Like, so
I think most songwriters, even now, I still feel like every placement I get is a demo to get into the next Absolutely. Thing or the hit I had at the last radio single or whatever it is that it's all just so you can get into the next room. Yes. It's never about this one, but it's different when you need the money.
So what happens is when you come out here, they don't tell you is people will sign you because they don't, because you don't know and you don't have the money and they know that you need money. So just like everyone else in Cali, I came out and signed a bad deal. I signed one of the worst deals that these people told me was a revolutionary deal, and it was a publishing deal. Like, not just a publishing deal, like the old school publishing deal with a 10-song, like, recoup. Yes. And I was like, okay, cool. Coming into the music industry, not knowing the music industry, I'm like, I got 10 songs from yesterday. And they don't tell you that a 10 song in a publishing deal is not 10 physical songs. It's 10 songs at 100% per song.
Yeah.
I had no clue what any of that was. By the time I realized I was in a bad deal, like, I had about 3 placements under my belt. And I'm like, what is going on? I've been gave them the 10 songs. Oh, that's what I'm in? Wait, no, they told me I could. It was awful. But by the grace of God, I had met my manager, who's my manager today, Christian McCurdy, who manages Nisha Charles. Like, that's my sis, the GOAT. I loved y'all interview, by the way. I loved it. And I had ran into my brother Sterling Sims at UNPG. That's my family. Like, that's really my boy.
Go ahead. No, he's just great. He's like, he's a great singer.
He's a great singer. I'm a fan of Sterling, like the singer. Like, but I knew Sterling from Philly, the singer that was on the Jay-Z album. Like, I didn't know Sterling, the executive, from behind the scenes, and he's making amazing power moves. So what happens is I meet Sterling, and I'm still thinking the thing that I was in, I was able to, like, still sign an actual publishing deal. Meeting Sterling, he told me, hey, they got you in this, but I believe in you. Christian, your manager, believes in you. We're going to figure this out. Don't worry. We'll get you out of this. And I was like, huh? That happens? Wait a minute. So you can get into a deal, and then if your talent level, or if the people actually behind the scenes believe in you, they'll do whatever it takes to get you out of that thing? Wow. That's nuts. So through the power that be, I feel like I'm skipping ahead, but...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
But that's not a thing, man.
Yeah, that's not like I didn't feel like that was a normal thing. But I felt like my entire story, even up until that point, none of it was normal. I never thought coming out to Cali and getting a house with a friend, like an invitation to stay at someone's house for a song a day, that's not normal. I was like, maybe this is, I just don't know what normal is anymore. At that time I hadn't had too many things in this, in the music industry, they have this magical term called the pipeline. Like, and it's like, oh, you have this, that, and third in the pipeline. So we can gauge what your estimated value is going to be. And then, yeah, I had nothing in the pipeline. Like, I just had a whole bunch of songs and demos that I'd been doing every single day, working, just trying to be the best me I possibly could. The day I had met Sterling and had the meeting with him at UNPG, I had met Jeremiah. The days in California were just crazy. So it was like, through my brother Bongo, by the way, through my brother Ray Keys, who introduced me to Bongo. Bongo and I had met 2 days before my meeting with Sterling. And no, 1 day before my meeting with Sterling. It was the day before. And we had did 11 songs that night. And Bongo was like, I've never worked with nobody that's as fast as me making beats and writing songs. And I'm like, I never worked with nobody that's making beats as fast as I'm coming up with songs. I like Bongo. And he's like, yeah, we got to do this. So I felt like I had my Timberland Missy moment where I'm like, I got a producer that's my boy. Like, oh, we got to lock in. He's like, I got to introduce you to Jeremiah. I love Jeremiah. I can't wait to meet Jeremiah. So he's like, yo, tomorrow come on by Jeremiah's house. At the meeting with Sterling, we get through the meeting. He's like, yo, I'm about to go to Jeremiah's house. You want to ride? Yes. Yes, I do. So I get to Jeremiah's house, and Jeremiah was one of the coolest people I ever met first time. He had his meeting with Sterling, but he showed me where his studio was at in his house. Amazing house. And we're just in the studio. We did like 4 songs. And I was like, wow, I think I have 4 songs with Jeremiah in this Magic Pipeline now. And through just working with my brother and Bongo and Jeremiah, we literally hit it off. I mean, we just started working on records every single day. And when I wasn't working with Jeremiah, Bongo and I were just going to every session we possibly could. This is the top of 2018. We're going to different sessions trying to figure it out. I'm still in that bad deal, but I know that it's getting worked out through Christian and Sterling. And we just running it up. Kid Ink, Guaple, who else was just like in the earlier Bongo sessions? So many. This amazing artist named Jilly. Bongo has a phenomenal artist named Girlfriend that we were working with. And we were just crafting our sound together, like just working with different people. Game was one of the first people that was like, hey, y'all are super dope. Come on through the studio. And I'm like, your Game. Like, the Game. Like, I grew up listening to G-Unit and the Documentary. And like, I love your music. I never thought I'd be in a room with you. And he was one of the coolest people, open arms, like, yo, come on through. And with Game, what I realized was you meet one person, you can't unmeet anybody. That's number one. So then you get into these different rooms and people are talking about you because of the type of person you are. Like, I'm smiling and just happy to be here all the time. And I'm bringing that happy to be here to a Game session. And I don't care what we're doing. I'm just happy to be here working with somebody I've always wanted to work with. And he told me a couple times, bro, I really, really enjoy how refreshing your energy is. You know, just don't change. Just be you. You're really like, you enjoy this. Like, yo, just keep doing you. Through Bongo and go ahead.
Like in an actual, in a practical way, when you're writing 4 songs in a night, do you freestyle the whole thing? Is it just in your head before you start singing it?
It depends.
Who writes 4 songs in one night? And how does any human do that regularly without burning out after 2 nights of that in a row? I mean,
it takes a lot of weed. I'm joking. Honestly, it's I feel like it's just like the mechanics of being able to shoot a jump shot. Like, it's like if you know how to do it, you just get to your free throw line and just get them reps up. I learned my way of writing a song, like, through a lot of sleepless nights, partyless nights, like back in New Jersey, before I ever came out to California. And I never stopped. It's like, still to this day, even though I'm in a hotel room in Atlanta, I have a session later and I had booked me a studio just so that I can get my own thoughts out. It's very therapeutic for me to write. So 4 ideas, sometimes I have a concept, but sometimes it may be from a conversation with an engineer right before I walk into a booth. It may be the phone call that I didn't get. It may be an Instagram post I see that inspires me to just give my perspective on whatever the subject is. And I love it. So it's like, if I can do what I love all the time, like, why not? So if we're in a studio and it's more beats, you're going to have more songs.
If, you know, if you were to tell Red Lobster you that you're going to have a, you know, this placement before the Magical Pipeline, you know, that's amazing. You know, like, that's everything I hoped for. 'Cause I think all of us just want those placements.
Yeah.
if you were to say then that your second year you're going to have Kanye West featuring Ty Dolla $ign. I mean, let alone, you know, the other stuff. And, you know, obviously, you had The Game and YG and Jeremiah and Ty Dolla on that record. You had Rich Kid on songs. These are like, they're just of that year before you even get to the next year. You just jumped it up from I want a placement to I want to work with Hall of Famers. You know, what do you call it when imposter syndrome?
Yeah.
Do you feel like this is you in this world? Do you feel like that none of this is real?
That's an amazing question. Like, I feel like this is me, but it's sometimes where I get the imposter syndrome, and when I get that imposter syndrome, that's when it stops feeling real. And that's when I don't think I perform my best. With working with, you know, Jeremiah and Bongo, we had ended up giving a record. We had did this song together that I didn't think too much about. It was called Pootie Tang. And I was like, cool. And Jeremiah kept calling me like, yo, man, that Pootie Tang record, I got to record it. Like, we love that song, man. Like, I just got to cut it. But, you know, never thought too much of it. He gets a call to go to Wyoming. And I'm like, why are you still looking at me? We were cracking up. And he's like, you know what? I'm out. I'll leave. He goes down to Wyoming. He's working. And I get a call randomly saying, yo, I need that Pootie Tang session. And I'm like, all right, okay, here. Like, sent it off to Jeremiah. And the next day, he's like, yo, Ye's fucking with this. Like, and I'm like, there's no way in the world. Bro, I'm still sleeping on this floor in North Hollywood. Nah. Okay, cool, right? Cool. 1 week goes by. We heard nothing else about the song. I didn't know if it was cut. It was nothing else. I had my last $10 at this point. I'm still in this bad deal, right? Well, I had my last $10 on May 31st. May 31st, I was released from that deal. So the execution papers of that bad publishing deal, once I talked to the OG, he was like, that I had did the deal with, and he realized that it wasn't what he thought it was. He's like, oh, bro, no problem at all. I'm not here to pigeonhole you or anything. If you're not happy, cool. I can't do anything else but super appreciate and thank him for just allowing me to just be able to freely create. So I get completely out of my deal on May 31st, Ross, just to show you how great my God is, right? I'm down to my last $10, and I'm with one of my homegirls who actually it was just one of my best friends at the time, like super amazing singer, Amal. Like, she's phenomenal. She was actually the muse in all of my Happy to Be Here videos. So the girl in the red dress, I spent like my last $10 on her on like a quesadilla. And she went home. She was going to Toronto. And I came back to the house. I just remember being super excited that I was able to sleep on the couch tonight. Because I'm like, yo, Dre's not here, so I can sleep on the couch. Bet. I had a session later that night with Bongo, with Little John, like from the Eastside Boys. It was like super random, but I love Little John. And he's one of the coolest people in the world. So I had a session at 12 o'clock with Little John. It's about 9 o'clock. And I'm like, man, I'm out of that deal. This is our first time I feel like I can breathe, but I'm also in the music industry. I feel like, let me just take a nap real quick before this session. And I wake up to like 100 Instagram messages. Now, at this time, I have 4,000 like followers max. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, is there in my homegirl Jazzy, super amazing, phenomenal songwriter. She wrote Old Town Road, like, super dope. She comments me on the Shade Room post, and she's like, that's Ant. Yo, congratulations, Ant. And I'm like, wait, what happened? What are we talking? What are we congratulating? And I click the post, and it's a video of Kanye in Wyoming dancing to Get a Genie Out the Bottle. And I lost my mind because I heard it, and I was like, that's me. That's me on the song. Like, that's me. And I didn't know what to, and I'm like, wait a minute. I'm on a song with Kanye West. And I called my mom and I just broke down in tears. I was just so happy just to say, like, I made it. Like I feel like I have something. And I was released out of the deal. So I was completely free. Like, it was so amazing. I get a call from Jeremiah. He's like, bro, congratulations, dog. Like, you did it, yo. I'm like, what happened? He's like, they like your version. I was trying to, it's, you know, they like your version. You're welcome. I'm like, no way. You did not just, he's like, yeah, bro, we did this. It's you. They like you, and it's your time now. And I have a song with Kanye West and Ty Dolla $ign that was a me song with Jeremiah. That Jeremiah and I had just wrote, just having fun, you know? It's, God is so good, bro. So, so, so good.
You know, having, everyone gets real serious in a studio because this song needs to be a hit, and it's all really calculated for a lot of people. It isn't always just having fun. And that's why I like the Game's Right, where like having that refreshing personality in the room gives freedom to be something different. Also, when you're doing four songs in a night instead of one song, then it's like three of them can suck.
Yeah. One of them is going to hit.
You know, because it doesn't, you don't, you know, all four can suck, but if you're doing a week of that or you're doing four nights of that or whatever it is, then again, all of them can suck but one. Right. In a whole year, all of them can suck but one.
I took from our entire conversation since me making songs in 2009, you figure from 2009 to about 2018, is 9 years of so many songs that I've been blessed to be able to write and work on before I ever had my big break, my first record that was released. And just by the grace of God, it was with Kanye West on, and I was a featured artist. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, for me, when I was like trying to be an artist early on in Jersey, I was having trouble understanding, how did Drake get to Lil Wayne on his debut mixtape that everybody loved? Like, how is Wayne already on So Far Gone? I know Room for Improvement happened, I know Comeback Season happened, but how did this happen? How did J. Cole, how was he signed by The Warm Up, even though The Warm Up was the one that everybody is like that was his stamp before Friday Night Lights? How did Big Sean rap for Kanye in front of a radio station? Where is my Aunt Clemens moment that is going to like make me? And when I stopped chasing the moment, it happened for me. Like, when I stopped looking at life through what it was, well, for every one of those situations, they were all different. Drake was blessed to have been paired up with Jazz Prince in Houston. That was his travel. He was able to travel to from Toronto to the States to go to Houston and meet with somebody who knew Wayne. Like, J. Cole traveled from Fairville to New York. I was like, I got to get out of New Jersey. I can't just, like, I can't get discovered here. I'm not, like, by the grace of God, like Big Sean rapped for Kanye in Detroit, but that was Detroit, a major city. Kanye had to come through Detroit. Nobody has to come through until now. We're going to make it. But they didn't have to come through Willingboro, New Jersey. But Willingboro is the mecca of, at least in my life, the mecca of just so, like, so great music. There's so many great, talented people from Willingboro that I would love, like, to be a part of a story that has people coming through Willingboro to figure out their music. Like Mike Zombie, who did Started from the Bottom, is from Willingboro. Ryan Toby, who I spoke of from City High, is from Willingboro. Like, it's, the list goes on. There's so many amazing people from my small city. I just wish at that time that we had something that someone could come through and discover, if you will. But I was like, let's go to Cali. Let's figure it out. And my moment happened the moment I started trusting God and the moment that I literally just believed in myself. Like, the record I had done with Jeremiah, the Pootie Tang song, was just something fun that we both enjoyed. And we weren't trying to make a hit. We weren't trying to do anything outside of have fun making a great record. And I think that's...
You have a you have a lot of songs that end up on major albums and ones that get, you know, nominated. None of those were all those from the same kind of sessions. Where did Bad Idea, which gets nominated as a song, does, you know, when you start working with like G-Eazy, like some of those people, I feel like have a history of more kind of like a slower process than four songs in a night.
But that's what I thought also. But then you get into the studio with like a G-Eazy, for example, and we're knocking out four songs a session. It just depends on the pace of the artist and, like, you know, what they want to absolutely, what their ultimate goal is. But like the Bad Idea record came from just Bongo calling me and saying, yo, I'm with Cordae right now and pull up. And I'm like, I have a lot of, like, I've been blessed. I can't stress it enough that I've been blessed. I don't want this to seem like this is just normal that, oh, I can just call up YB and Cordae and say, hey, I'm on my way to your session. Like, but God put me in a position where that's a reality now. So like Bongo called me and said, hey, pull up. Cordae's here. And I met Cordae and he's one of the coolest people ever. And he's like, yo, he said, you sing. I want to hear what you do. And we did the Bad Idea in the first 5 minutes. We actually did Bad Idea and Gifted, the song that's out with him and Roddy Ricch, around the same time. I think it was like either the same day or like a day or two apart from each other. And I never thought too much from that. It was just kind of like, yo, pull up, smoke some weed, have some fun. And all right, cool, peace. And then a few months later, it's like, hey, that song you did, remember? Nope. Yeah, well, what? Grammy nominated.
The Sunday Service, you know, that Kanye West album, you end up getting obviously closer involved with Kanye. And there's no way that that's just because of your talent. And my assumption, again, is that like the people who worked on that album are all strong Christians, and that had to be a big part of it, because there's such conviction in those songs.
Yeah.
I don't know Kanye, but explain what it was like to work on that. You know, obviously there were a lot of random videos of it that you could watch, but this is a separate, this is unusual. You know, you work in pop music, you're working in R&B, you're working in all of it. This was a curveball for a lot of people because, you know, usually that's gospels for that stuff. There and pop
is over
and
here,
rap
is then this for me.
And then there's
like being a huge Kanye fan going into it. And if anybody's a Kanye fan, you know, this has been ingrained in Kanye from the rip. His one of the biggest records that he came out with was Jesus Walks off of College Dropout. So it's like it wasn't too far of a stretch for him to do something relating to God, because I believe throughout every one of his projects, you could kind of find where he was speaking to his relationship with God, but he's wore that his whole career. I looked at Ye and was like, man, it's brave of you to be a Christian and still walk in that world of the secular music and be so dominant in that world of R&B and the pop world that you don't care what people may think or say, and you're going to praise God at the highest level. I was like, it takes strength and courage to do that. And I just appreciate being around to see it. When Ye initially called me down to Chicago, this is after Ye happened. This is after the Teyana Taylor album that I was super blessed to be a part of. And he called me and he's like, yo, I'm working on Chance album in Chicago. Pull up. And I was working with Chance and Kanye in September 2018. And we were all just trying to figure it out, working on amazing music. And Ye was like, yo, I want to do a project called Yandi. Like, I feel like we should just do like a 10 song project and just drop it next week. And I was like, of course, let's go. So started working with Ye on that. And what started out being something turned into what Jesus is King ultimately was. And I was blessed to be able to see the transformation of just an idea of an impulse of like, oh, I just want to do something. But through that, I just want to do something, finding purpose in it. And your purpose being that thing that guides you to the ultimate goal of what you actually want to do. Like, Ye talks about it a lot. When he started Sunday Service, that was just something he wanted to do. It wasn't really calculated. Honestly, being asked to be a part of it, I didn't know what we were doing for a long time. At first, it was just come through jam session. We just reworking some of the songs. But then it's like, well, we want to repurpose some of the songs and give a gospel tone to them. I'm down for that. I grew up in the church. Yes, I'm with that. Then it's week 15 of Sunday Service, and we're doing Coachella. And we're performing a song that I just wrote with Ye on Tuesday, on Sunday, like to work with Kanye West.
When you're saying we're performing, you're on stage during Coachella?
Yes. I performed with Kanye at Coachella. We did the song Water. We premiered it at Coachella, but we got a chance to perform it like 2 years ago now, or it was, yeah, 2 years ago now. And it was a year ago now.
How did being in front of 80,000 people,
it was
having question your own voice and being like, I don't know if I like my voice, to hearing your voice in that environment, I don't know that I can really imagine.
It was that. A lot of the journey for me has been super nerve-wracking along the way. That's why I speak to my relationship with God a lot, because he's my strength. So those times where I really feel human and I'm like, I don't have it, God is there for me. It's like, nah, we got it. In my head, I was not strong enough to walk out and be on the top of a mountain with Kanye West, Shake, Tiana Taylor, Kid Cudi, Chance the Rapper, and like Ty Dolla Sign, like my brother. Like, I'm like, these are cemented artists. They've already done stuff. Like, they're all out. What's happening? And what I never want to do is question what God does for us. And I was like, well, in that same space, I'm also an artist to someone. Like, I'm an artist to me, but to someone else that's in Willingboro, that's looking up, like, man, that guy that was working at Red Lobster that served me those biscuits is performing at Coachella. So I was like, I got to do this for somebody bigger than me right now. The fear of going out there and performing in front of the 50 or 60,000 people it was nerve-wracking, but it was super fun, because when I put the right perspective on it, one, I was going out there to give praise and worship to God. I'll do that in front of one person. I'll do that in front of a million people. So I've said that my entire life, and I felt like this was my moment for God to be like, you said you praise me anywhere. Praise me. I was able to do it on the highest stage, like with some of the people I've always looked up to and felt super comfortable around. And talk about not liking your voice. I just did a demo song on Tuesday at my house called Water. Like, I didn't think that demo record that I was just sending Ye, that we had the conversation about, and he's giving me the lyrics about a song, an idea that he has. I never thought that was going to turn into Sunday of the same week of performing that in front of all of these people. And it's like, I couldn't just buckle down and just say, oh, I'm just afraid. I was like, well, we got to go. Let's do this. And it was one of the best moments of my life. I had the most fun. I was performing a song with one of my favorite artists of all time. Like, God, like, life doesn't get much better than that.
No, it really doesn't. You know, I'm going to go a little out of order because this next thing was just, you know, working on The Lion King, Beyonce and Jay-Z and all the people, Childish Gambino, all these people on it, and another Grammy nomination for that album. And yeah, you know, there's you then check off sort of the rest of the sort of Holy Trinity mm-hmm. as far as concerned.
Yeah.
Maybe like, but Beyonce, Jay-Z, Kanye, I don't know, like, who of living artists right now are bigger than those three. Did it start to, you know, it starts to make you wonder what's next or what haven't you done once you knock off the biggest names in an entire industry? Yeah, I guess I still have other songs I want to ask about, but where do you go from there? And is there a point when that happens when you start, like, you know, at this point, your sisters must be losing their minds. Your mom must be.
It's amazing. Like, I'm still losing my mind. I'm literally in the middle of it. To go from writing with Shamika and Philly to being in a session and asked to write on a song with Beyonce is a dream come true, and it's nothing less than that. So for me, what helped me stay grounded was, like, I've always wanted to do this, so this is one task, but it's like I have a whole list of things I've always wanted to do. So, like, be here, be in this moment, but to answer the what's next question, I don't always have the answer as to what's next. I have an idea as to what I want to do, and I allow room for God to be God. So, like, hey, God, I really would like to do this. And it's, you give the space for the parameters of, well, what are you going to do for that thing that you want to do? I really want to be in a room with Kanye West. I'll do 4 songs a day, every single day, on my side for him to allow the room for me to get into the room. After, you know, the big artist, for me, it was like, I would love to do a project on my own. I'd love to give my effort to the world and like just one cohesive project that is like, this is what I did. Because I have so many songs that in the midst of writing a lot of the songs, I started losing the sight of what an Aunt Clemens personal song was. I hadn't written a song for me, it felt like, in forever. I was writing a lot of songs for me, about me, in Jersey. Coming into sessions, I learned the idea of the consumer, the idea of who are you speaking to when you're speaking. Just a few, like, even super dope songwriter tricks, like you, me, us, and we in conversations is positive. He, she, they, and them is negative. So if we're having a song, if we're writing a song and I'm talking about he or she or they or them is normally negative, as opposed to me mentioning you, I, us, or we. And then even the psychology of the songs and people listening to it, I was like, man, started from the bottom, now we here works because it's we. Everybody can sing that. If Drake says started from the bottom, now I'm here, there's a few people in Drake's lane that can say started from the bottom, now I'm here. But we can all feel like we won and we're a part of that started from the bottom. I just like that idea of inclusion as opposed to excluding people, like pushing certain people away in the tenses. So, like, for me, I was like, you know what, let me try, as opposed to doing a whole bunch of just songs that anybody could cut, let's dive deep and see what an Aunt Clemens song sounds like. And I was working on a few records with my brothers, the roommates at the time, and super dope producers. They're my boys. We did like 4 or 5 in just the first few sessions. And the first song we did was a song called 4-Letter Word. And it sounded very, very, very different for me, like as far as just something I was used to. But I went back to my roots of, well, if I'm going to write for me, I'm going to write to God. So 4-Letter Word is me speaking. I haven't even told anybody this. Like, this is super fun. It's me speaking to the ideal of love, which is my relationship with God. I felt like, go back to that thing that you started doing, and you'll always have that same, like, oh man, enjoyment of it. Like, I'm a huge kid. Like, I'm a real big kid. I collect Power Rangers. I got NSYNC dolls at my house. Like, I'm a collector of like my childhood memories. I think it's like the coldest thing to be submersed around just all your childhood memories, because you'll be able to continually create from a childlike place. So,
how did you get Timbaland on that song?
What happens is, I'm in Miami and I was working with Ye on, it was still Yandy at that time, if I'm not mistaken. So we were just working on Yandy, and he was working with Timbaland. And I met Timbaland in this purple room in Miami in this studio. And I'm like, this studio, I know I've heard the name of it before, but it's very familiar. I know I haven't physically been here, but I feel like I've been here before. And it's Hit Factory in Miami. And it was the purple room that we were sitting in was the Dirt Off Your Shoulders room where Timberland played Jay-Z Dirt Off Your Shoulders on Fade to Black. And I was like, yo, this is the Fade to Black room. Like, I called all my homies. I was like, look where I'm at. You see the purple? Like, it was amazing. Tim walks in and he's like, yo, you Ant that I hear so much about. Ye can't stop talking about you. I lose my mind anytime I meet anybody and they say, Ye can't stop talking about you. That's so cool to me. And Tim's like, yo, send me some songs. I want to hear some songs. I sent him probably about 3 or 4 songs and 4-letter word was in it. And I remember leaving Miami a week later, being in Philly, just hanging out with like my cousin. My godbrother Stevie was actually taking me to the airport. And I get a text from Timberland with drums on 4-letter word. I'm like, what is this? What is going on? Like, this is, he's like, yeah, bro, like, I couldn't help myself. This, I love this song. Like, this is it. I'm like, crazy. Wait a minute. This is, okay, cool. Fast forward, he pulls up on Rants from 1500 or Nothing at their Sound Academy in California, and he plays them 4-letter word. There's actually a clip of it on Instagram. He played it for him. He's dancing, and he put a clip up. And the clip got like 100,000 views. And I was like, wow, I have a song now? And he's like, he called me up. Yeah, it's your time, bro. Everybody love this song. It's your time, bro. Thank you, Timberland. Like, what? And for the next few months or so, my team and I, Christian, we were trying to figure out like what exactly we were going to do to make sure that this song and the other collections of songs that we had been working on at that point was just the best body of work we could possibly do. And we just got to working on Happy to Be Here. We shot, if the Timberland clip probably came out in February, by March I had all the videos shot for all the songs except for Aladdin. And Aladdin, I didn't have a feature for. And it was like, I don't know who I'm going to get on this song. This is killing me. Like, I don't know how I'm going to figure this out. But like I said, a lot of the times I have an idea and I allow God to be God. So I knew that something was going to happen. I just didn't know what it was. And I was just rolling with the punches. And at that point, we had shot all the videos with my super dope homies, Cole and Caleb, phenomenal, like producers. They shot 4-letter word, Excited. We shot Beep. Lord, the name of this song is like escaping me. Not Good For You.
Promise?
Best Friends. We didn't shoot a video to Pinky Promise, and I really feel like once I actually like get my life together, I'm gonna go back and do that because a lot of people I talk to say that that's their favorite song. So it's like for me as a super fan of Chris Brown, I would have loved it if he went back and did a video for Poppin', the like off of the Chris Brown album. Even though he's Chris Brown now, it's like I would love that. So I would love to give my fans, like, if there's Ant Clemens fans out there, even like a thing or is listening, like, I would love to give y'all like something cool to look forward to. So a Pinky Promise video will absolutely be happening. Just I don't know when, but we shot all those videos, and I had at that point, Ty Dolla $ign is like my family. Like Ty, literally, since the day I met him, has been nothing but open arms and a guiding light, like for me, like really like a real mentor as to how to handle the pressures of being an artist and your regular life and what to do to maneuver yourself to get to the ultimate goal of the best artist that you want to possibly be. And I can't do anything but thank him just for being like super dope. And he was like, bro, you know, I'll do whatever you want, bro. It's like, so what you want? I'm like, you trying to get on this song for my project? It's like, load it. And Ty and I knocked out Excited in like 30 minutes. And at this point, I'm losing my mind because I have a song with Timberland and a song with Ty Dolla $ign. And I have a collection of songs with some of my favorite producer homies that like I wouldn't even imagine having records with. And it's funny you mentioned G-Eazy earlier. G-Eazy calls me and says, this is around November of 2019. he calls me. He's like, yo, bro, I'm getting ready to go to Miami and work with the Neptunes, and I need you down there. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, bro, you know what we do? Come on, man. I need you down there with me. Let's go. I was like, this is crazy. So I was in the Bahamas with Meek, like working with Meek on some stuff, and left the Bahamas and came right to Miami. And this is December, January of last year, the top of this year. And worked with the Neptunes and G-Eazy. Like, day one, I met Pharrell, and I'm losing my mind because I had already worked with Chad, like, through sessions, thank God, earlier, a year before that in L.A. So I already had a rapport with Chad, like, and I was just like, I'm cool with the homie everybody says don't talk. I'm special. Yeah. I'm joking. But, like, Chad is the best. Like, he really, really is the best. And he was one of the coolest people when I met him. And Pharrell was Pharrell. Like, it's like, yo, this is really Pharrell Williams. And he walks in and he's like, hey, I'm P. I was like, what? No. You don't have to introduce you. You made happy. Like, what are you talking? Hi, I'm Ant. Nice to meet you, bro. But what? And it was even crazier because when he came in the room, he was listening to one of the records that G and I did. And he's like, yo, who's that singing the hook? G's like, yo, that's Ant. He was like, yeah, that, I like your voice. Came outside and Pharrell hit me with one of those Pharrell bars, like one of those like Jay-Z conversation bars. Like, I told him, he's like, yo, man, I really like your voice. And, you know, like I told you earlier, I was like, I'm a little self-confident about my voice. I was like, man, nothing but autotune. Like, this is autotune, right? He was like, no, it's your tone, not the tune. And I was like, for real? He said, yeah, man, it's your tone. It isn't just the tune. You know, you have a very, very special tone, and I would love to have the opportunity to work with you if you have a few days after this G-Eazy sessions. Huh? For real? He's like, yeah, bro, like, just if you could stay in Miami, I don't want to mess up your schedule or anything. There is no schedule for real. I'm here. Like, so for the next 3 weeks, in January and February of this year, I was working with Pharrell and the Neptunes, and we did everybody. We did Snow Allegra came through. We worked on amazing records with her. I love working with Snow. She's like one of the coolest, most confident like singers and just dope people just to be around. And she's a Michael Jackson lover just like me. So it's like we fan out about Michael Jackson stuff all the time. We worked on Snow. We worked with Cap G. We was working with SZA. And randomly, I called up Ty Dolla Sign this one day to the studio when we were in the session with SZA. And we did the Hit Different record like that out there. And it was so many cool moments just happening out there with Pharrell. P goes, yo, you know that record you played me, like when I played him a few songs off the project, like, what's up? I'm trying to get on that. That song that I had played him was Aladdin. And I couldn't believe it. I didn't even think it was real. And I was very, very self-confident. Not even self-confident. I was very, very, I was afraid to ask him. Because we had the conversation and he said, yo, I will hop on this song. But I didn't want to ask him again and just keep, yo, what's up with that song? It took a conversation with my mom on Super Bowl Sunday, like for me to have the courage to ask him, like, yo, do you think you'd be able to knock that verse out? Just because I had my manager talking to me, telling me, yo, we got a deadline. I know you really want to release your project in Black History Month. And the last day you could possibly send in this mix to get everything the way we need it will be Monday. And this is Sunday at this point. I'm in Miami and the Super Bowl was in Miami. So I was like, oh, I didn't even connect any of the dots. I was just kind of like, today is a wild day, but I'm just going to go with the day. I knew I had to perform at Sunday Service out here because they had brought Sunday Service to Miami, and I was super excited to like perform. And outside of Sunday Service, I had no real plans as to what was going on. So that morning after my pep talk with my mom, I text P and say, yo, brother, one, thank you for allowing me into your space and working. I'm actually in the mixing process of my project. You think we'd be able to knock out the record like, you know, anytime, whenever you're free. He's like, bro, tomorrow. We're going to load it up first thing tomorrow. I was like, huh? He's like, yeah, tomorrow. Don't even worry. And were you watching the Super Bowl? I thought he was saying, yo, let's go to the studio and we'll watch the Super Bowl. I'm like, oh, you know, just probably the hotel. You want to come? I'm still thinking he's saying to the studio or to my hotel. Well, not my hotel because I was already there. I was like, well, probably like somewhere, like a game party, like with a couple people, and it's Pharrell. He sends me the address to his hotel. I get to his hotel. It's 5 black trucks lined up outside of the hotel. Pusha T's there, P's there, and his wife. And it's like, I'm losing my mind. And I'm like, hey, where are we going? They're like, the Super Bowl. What?
Actual Super Bowl.
The real place. So we had a police escort with Pharrell and Pusha T to the Super Bowl this year in 2020. And I went to the Super Bowl with Pharrell. And the next day, without skipping a beat, without saying anything, I didn't even ask him. We walked into the studio. He was a man on a mission. He said, load up Aladdin. Whoa. And he knocked that verse out in 10 minutes. Like, he heard it a couple times. He walked outside, like, probably took a call or two. P is the GOAT. Not only just for being a man of his word, but just like the professionalism. Like, he knows his sound, and he just came in and just knocked it right out and was like, yo, bro, here, make sure everybody has what they need so that you can get that thing mixed, because that got to go out. I can't do anything but be super appreciative of these legends and people like that that are just phenomenal people. Like, super huge thank you. Thank you to Pharrell for just being great.
Obviously, the other, I could list a bunch of other people that are icons, Skrillex and Diplo. Like, it's not just hip hop. It's Jason Derulo's other pop. But the last song I want to ask about, you know, you have all these other, a lot of these songs are, cultural hits, or they're Grammy nominated hits, or they're hits within certain genres. But, you know, the My Oh My, as for Camila Cabello's with DaBaby, is a number one pop record. I'm pretty sure that's the number, you know, the first number one pop record. It's a different experience than a number one song on Billboard or all the other things. It's just a different thing. It's not better than, it's just different. Right. You know, how did it feel to be part of that versus
Honestly, every opportunity I look at as just like the greatest blessing ever. So being invited into a room to work with those amazing writers and producers on the Camila project, like, I couldn't believe I was in a room with Lou Bell. I'm like, this is nuts to me that I'm sitting here talking to Billy Walsh and kicking it with him. And like, these people are here making the songs to the soundtracks to everyone's life right now. So, one, I just wanted to make sure that I took in everything I needed to in that moment. I performed as much as I possibly could, but really in those rooms, I wanted to learn what it is about the way you approach records that gets to pop, as opposed to it being an R&B song or a urban record. Like, I just wanted to understand the format a little more. Like, I loved NSYNC and Britney Spears and Backstreet Boys growing up, and it took becoming a songwriter to realize, no, you love Max Martin. Like, you love that sound of pop. So for me, with the Camila sessions, it felt like I was right at home, just like able to do that thing that I've always loved to do anyway. And like we were talking about earlier, that stepping stone allowed me into different rooms where I'm able to now create with like a pop space. And I love writing pop songs. Like, my next goal is to go to Nashville, because I really, really, really love country music. And like, I love the stories that country music tells. And like, Ed Sheeran is one of my favorite songwriters of all time. Ed, James Fauntleroy, and John Bellion. So they make up the makeup of Ann Clemens. And the songwriting DNA, like, when I try to approach records, I think about them constantly. Like, how would they approach records? Oh, they wouldn't say this. Like, because I feel like they are the epitome of great. Like, amongst all of the other influences I have, just the way they have with words. And I feel like in Nashville, they care about the words. And I want to just become the best songwriter I possibly can be. And I think in Nashville, just how I felt like in 2017, LA was where the music industry was. I feel like the songwriters are in Nashville. So I want to swim in the pool with the sharks.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously Roddy Ricch, Black, a bunch of these other artists that are massive, you know, I feel like the next up in my eyes is her. I just feel like
she is one of my favorite people in the world. That's just off the rip.
So damn talented. Yes. It's shocking.
But to be that talented and be that nice is the thing for me. Like, her personality is way better than any song she's ever done, and her music is legendary. Like, her personality, the way that she carries herself, the way that she cares about her craft, and she cares about, like, the songs and the musicians around her. Like, she's really, really dope. Like, I don't know if there's, like, a super effect or not, but if I'm not mistaken, I think that she, out of her own pocket, during the quarantine, paid, like, her whole staff, like, to make sure that everybody was cool. Like, everybody out of her own. But that's just the type of person that she is. And I love to just, you know, be around genuine people, but like just people that are walking in what God wants them to do. And she is literally, if I had to pick in a hat, I would always put my money on her. I love working with her.
If you ever need a 5'10" Jewish guy to join that session,
I got your number now. It's over.
All right. So in this last segment, we'll call 5 for 5. I'm going to list 5 things you can just tell me. First thing that comes out off the top of your
head.
Got
it.
Let's start with Christian, your manager.
The greatest in the world. He hates me. He's the person that, no, he doesn't hate me, but he's really the greatest in the world. He answers my calls all the time, and if not every time, he calls me back in 5 seconds. He's a brother that I need when I didn't even know that I needed a brother at that time. He's truly, truly one of my best friends.
Michael Jackson.
The greatest of all time. 5. Dylan. The greatest of all time, the greatest of all time, the greatest of all time. Like, it's like just 5 the greatest of all times. My biggest influence, he's the reason why I want to be able to mix dancing and singing. Like, that's my next feat, is to show the world I can dance, because I can move a little bit. And just the epitome of great, the epitome of greatness.
Willingboro / Philly with, you know, a sprinkle of Ryan, Toby, and Shamika. And
home. I call it home. I think of home. I think of great people make great things happen, and great things always happen to great people. I think of Philly cheesesteaks. I think of Iskrabibbles. Like, I think of like Gitanos and just like going to Mill Creek Park with my homies and playing basketball. Like, it just feels like home.
Let's go with Amber, Ashley, and your parents.
Amber and Ashley. No, Amber and Ashley are. I love my sisters to death.
We'll respond about our sisters, by the way. So
love
there you go.
My sisters. They're the greatest and biggest blessing I feel like God's been able to do in my life, to be able to be a big brother to 2 little sisters and show them like the way that they can be like received from a man. I think is super dope. To be a male figure in their lives is a responsibility that I take on very seriously. And I appreciate both of them. Both of them drive me to be a better me every single day. When I think about my parents, I love my mom and my dad like so much. I get so happy when I just think about both my parents. My dad, we're big comic book fans, so we love like Superman and Spider-Man movies and just we love to call up each other and just talk shit about stupid stuff. Like, yo, did you see? Like, I love my dad. My mom is an angel walking the earth. I'm so appreciative to have been blessed to have a mom that is understanding, that is sound, that is like my hero. Like, even in the middle of the divorce, like when like life was turbulent, like my mom, I had to change my perspective in the when I was going through it, but now at 29 I can say that my mom showed me what strength was, because she went to find her true happiness. She realized she wasn't truly happy in her relationship, and she had to go find her true happiness. Both of my parents are in two happy relationships, and I love my step parents. Like, I love my additional family. Early on, I didn't know how to process it, because I was like, I want my family, and I want. And the more I grew up, the quicker I realized it wasn't about me, the sooner I started to understand the beauty in everything. Although my parents might not be together, my dad being my dad to my stepbrothers is a blessing in itself. Like, they were able to grow up and they were able to receive love that my dad was giving to us also. So he was able to then impart into a whole nother generation of family. My mom is able to love a husband like who may not have experienced that type of love before in his last relationship. Like, I look at, I believe I'm able to look at things through a different lens, and I'm very, very appreciative of every single thing that God does, because without them getting divorced in 2009, we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation today. I know that was super long-winded, and that was like five, but that's my sisters and my parents.
My last thing, I feel like we have to say Jesus.
Yes, Jesus Christ is my provider. I could go on for hours about my love for God, but God is my best friend. Jesus Christ is the reason I'm able to have a relationship with God, because of what he did on the cross for every one of us. He knew all of us. God knows every single one of us by name. Like, and when I truly understood that, I never felt alone again. Like, I never felt like there was no one out there for me, because I knew that God has always been for me. He's been for everyone. And through the love of Jesus Christ, the Bible talks about, I don't want to mess up the verse because like it's killing me, but it's, you've already won. Like the battle happened. You've already won. So when you walk into your spirit, when you walk with the spirit of being a winner, you're going to attract winning. Like, I don't walk into a room feeling like, oh, I might lose this or I'm afraid of, because I know what God did for me was the ultimate sacrifice. So I'm not going to question what he's blessed me with by allowing me to be here. I'm going to be the person that he wants me to be. And I'm going to be the vessel that allows myself to be empty enough that I can hear God and then translate God in the best way that he wants me to do. So, Jesus Christ.
Well, I appreciate you doing this podcast. I get the feeling we'll be doing this often over the next few years, because at this rate, we'll have to do this like every 6 months.
Just to give you a little before you leave, this is my to you, right? Because I'm not sure how long it's going to take for this to come out, but like, I'm thinking by the time y'all are hearing this, this record will be out. It's the first single off of my next project. It's called Love, Sweat, and Tears. That's the name of the project. And the song is called Better Days, and it's me featuring Justin Timberlake.
What?
Yes, sir.
Damn, bro.
God is so good. Like, went from having NSYNC dolls in my house to now I have a song with Justin Timberlake. And he signed my NSYNC doll, too.
So weird, man. What a weird.
It's so crazy. I feel like Forrest Gump. Like, I truly feel like Forrest Gump.
I mean, there's no question that I just want to be, you know, your personality is obviously infectious, and I see why everybody wants to spend more time with you. It's hard to want to spend less time with somebody who brings in that kind of joy into a room. And you know, we've said very early on in this and publicly in every way we can that, you know, you have no idea how good or bad that song's going to be that night. And none of that.
Yeah.
It's like, did you have a good time? And that's all you can do, you know. And sometimes it's really, you know, you want to have a serious time. Sometimes you want to have a fun night, whatever it is. But all that can be fun.
Yes.
You know, and you just are like pouring fun out of you, and it's just really enjoyable to have spent this time with you so far, and you know, I'm proud of you for whatever that's worth.
No, that means the world, bro. Like, for real. Like, I'm, like I said at the beginning of this interview, like, I've been listening for a long time. Like, I'm a real fan, and I'm just happy to be able to have a story to tell. For real.
Love it. There you go. Crazy, man. And like, you know, yeah, one of these days we'll have to get in a room together, bro, and make music.
I'm around, and like, your homies with like Charlie, and I love Charlie, that's my boy. Like, yeah. Blake, you go with Blake.
Yeah, I mean, Slacken.
Yeah,
a little bit. I'm closer with Benny.
Word, I haven't worked with Benny yet.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't been doing a lot of sessions right now because everything going on, but
and I could tell you, since it's just me and you, I got some shit coming. Listen, Ross, you ain't heard from nobody, right? But I got an Ed Sheeran record.
You have what?
Ed Sheeran. I was taught myself how to play guitar 4 years ago, and like, the record was one of the first songs I taught myself how to play. Like, when I was playing guitar, I was like, oh, I could write a song to this. And it's the song, and we end up, he cut it. And Ed don't take records. Like, so I can't wait for that to come out. I pray that that's out very, very, very soon. God's good.
Damn, man. It's so incredible. Your story is awesome. It's really fun to watch. So everybody, you know, like, we all have, we've done 100-something episodes,
yeah,
and everyone has their own story, and everyone's on their own journey, and everybody's going around the world doing whatever they do. You know, and when it comes down to it, it's like, whatever makes you happy and content and all that stuff. But there's certain people who just end up with, you know, a even more unique story amongst a lot of unique stories.
Yeah.
This is what it is.
It's, I like the way you said that. That was really, really nice. Thank you.
Like, I'd like,
for real.
Yeah, it's just, it's fun to watch. But for real, we're definitely gonna have to do this again in like a year after more songs. We should just make it a thing. We'll say it's like a, we should put it in our calendars. November 9th, 2021.
It's already there. It's locked. Let me just let you know that. Like, for
really put it in our calendars and make it like every November 9th for like the next 10
forever.
Years, we'll do like it.
And what we have to do is, by the next one, we need a hit together. So like,
okay,
this next one, we need a number one together. Let's do it. I'm working on Timberlake right now, and I'm working on Bieber right now. So I need you.
I love it. Well, you know, if you need somebody while you're there on Zoom, or if you're there in Atlanta, let me know.
Yep.
Otherwise, it's going to be fucking fun.
My dog.
But you have my number, and let's chat soon.
Same, man. Family. Have a peace. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of And the Writer Is. If you want to hear music from this songwriter I just interviewed, be sure to check out our Spotify playlist or visit our website at andthewriteris.com. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe to us. You can also like us on Facebook and Twitter. And the Writer is produced by Joe London and published by Big Deal Music. A special thanks to David Silberstein from Mega House Music and Michael White. Until next time, this is Ross Golan.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.